for the next half hour to join us for interviews, discussion, inspiration, and for strategies to help you fulfill your potential, both in life and in business. Welcome to Remarkable Woman Radio. I'm Mandy Beverly, and today I have a very special guest called Steph Green. Now, Steph is an award-winning author, a blogger, a self-confessed metalhead. She's a cat enthusiast and also an alternate wedding celebrant. So welcome along, Steph. I'm really pleased that you could join us.
Hi, Mandy. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, it doesn't sound like you like to sleep very much, because as I was reading through your website, not only do you do freelance writing and ghostwriting, you're also a speaker at conferences and seminars and sit on panels, writing panels for National Writers Forum and romance writers and things like that. So how do you fit it all in?
Well, you're kind of right. I'm really not that fussed on sleeping. But I've been very, very lucky in that I've had quite supportive workplaces for a number of years. So I left my job, my last job, in February last year in order to do this crazy writing thing full time, which has been super exciting. But, you know, before that, I had really supportive offices and employers who kind of let me take time off to do things, and I'm just really you know quite driven and dedicated. Like, I just know that this is what I was meant to be doing, so I don't shag around.
There's tip number one on Remarkable Woman Radio. That's brilliant. Now, you write under a couple of titles, Stephanie Holmes and SC Green. So, and I know that paranormal and dark fantasy romance and all of those things are actually really popular out there. Is that right? I mean, because I don't know much about it, so please tell us.
Yes. It's been really exciting because originally I started writing sort of dark fantasy science fiction, kind of really serious, kind of like Neal Stephenson, China Mayville kind of stuff. And I had a publishing deal, which fell through. And I was looking at having to sort of, I'd been working for years and years and years and years to get this deal, and then it fell through. And I was looking at having to basically start all over again. And that was around the time that self-publishing started to become a viable way for authors to get their work out there.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, I've got this series that I've been working on for years and years, and, so I thought I'd give it a go. So I did that back in 2014, and I didn't sell very many copies of those series, but I absolutely loved the process. I loved having control over, you know, what my cover was going to look like, kind of formatting the book, finding my editors, and just kind of really connecting with my readers out there.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then it was actually, this was also around the time that 50 Shades of Grey was quite popular. So I was at a party one day, and a friend of mine was talking about how much she loved this book, and I'd kind of read the first chapter and thought it was a bit terrible, actually. And I was sort of saying that, I thought, you know, it's a bit terrible. And she said, well, you know, I don't think you could really, you know, could you write a book like that? I don't think so. And I kind of nodded, and I was like, yeah, you know, you're probably right, I couldn't. But in my head I was going, okay, well, challenge accepted.
Yeah, I was going to say, see who dares wins.
Yeah. So in secret, partly because of that, and I just wanted to try something different, and so partly because of that, I wrote in secret a little 30,000-word novella, which was about a reclusive artist who was also a fox shapeshifter, and the art curator who kind of brought him out of his shell. And I wrote this tiny thing in like 3 weeks, and I published it on Amazon under a completely secret pen name, didn't tell anyone, didn't even tell my husband. And I thought it would just, you know, sell a few copies or whatever. And then it sold like 1,000 copies in the first week.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, okay. And so I wrote the second one really quickly and put that out there, and it kept selling, and I kept expecting Amazon to email me and say, look, we're sorry, we've given you someone else's royalties by accident, you know. And that never happened. And then I sort of sheepishly had to tell my husband, well, I've kind of made all this money this month, but it was not from my super serious science fiction. It was from this, like, little story about the shape-shifting fox man.
Yeah, steamy yeah, sort of content.
Yeah, the steamy paranormal romance book. And he said, well, you know, you better write some more. So that's what I've been doing ever since 2015, and it has been amazing. And, yeah, I have readers all over the world, and sort of every book I write, I publish a book roughly every 6 to 8 weeks, and everyone, you know, brings in a few more readers, and, you know, things are just growing and growing, and it's really exciting.
Can I just stop you right there? I've just written a little bit, 30,000 words. I publish a book every 6 to 8 weeks. Steph, that is incredible. How many hours a day do you spend writing?
I spend about eight to nine hours working, but not all that time is writing. So I try to write between 2,000 words and 4,000 words a day on fiction. And some sort of goes up and down, depends if I have freelance work to do that day or, you know, other things like coming in here to talk to you. And I set a timer for 20 minutes, and then I write until the timer goes off, and then I take a two-minute break, and then I set the timer again, and I try and do that. Sort of helps keep me from looking at Facebook all the time. And I can usually write between 500 and 700 words every one of those 20-minute blocks. So it can only take a couple of hours if I have a really good day to write, get my 4,000 words, but not all days are good days.
I imagine, do you plan everything out? Because I'm curious, because as you know, I've written a little thing. Yes, my English is, and grammar and everything, as you know, is not as free-flowing and as great as what yours is. But how do you plan out to write either a fiction or non-fiction? How do you go about starting it?
So I'm sort of not really a planner. Writers often talk about you're in one of two camps. You're either a plotter, which is where you detail everything out in, you know, heaps of detail, or you're a pantser, meaning you write on the seat of your pants. And that's kind of what I am. But what basically happens is that the first draft of a book, so a typical book is 70,000 to 95,000 words. And my first draft of a book will be about 10 to 20,000 words, and it will be a super fast draft. It basically just has dialogue. It has bits where it says, put sex scene here or things like that, you know, without actually writing them. And that is my outline, although it's actually the first draft of the book. And that's where I figure out everything that happens, and I learn about the characters, and then I go back and I start from the beginning and I fill in all the pretty details.
The pretty details.
Yeah.
All the steamy stuff.
Yeah.
Because I know New Zealand Women's Weekly said you've been giving 50 Shades of Grey a bit of a run for their money.
I don't know if that's entirely true. I would like to. But
wouldn't it be amazing having a book that sells to millions of people around the world? That would be just amazing.
It would be pretty incredible.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you, I noticed on Instagram you have a tattoo of Sherlock Holmes on your arm, and I was very curious to know why, because I imagine that because it's there quite vibrantly, that it must mean something special to you.
It does. So I have two tattoos. I have one on my left arm, which is the Eye of Horus, the Egyptian Eye of Horus. And as a kid, I was very obsessed with archaeology in ancient Egypt and Egyptology. And I was originally I studied to be an archaeologist, but because I am legally blind, it was quite hard to find a job in that area, which is why I pivoted to becoming a writer.
Which is even an interesting career for someone that's legally blind as well, or is it?
It's really cool because as a writer, you don't, you know, no one can tell me I can't be a writer, you know, I can't be a writer because I can't see. Like, it's quite an empowering career, I find, and I get to, you know, I'm quite big on diversity in my books. So a lot of the heroines in my books or the heroes have disabilities or things like that, because I just think it's so important that everyone is able to see themselves in the books that they read. So, you know, I like kind of like to be a bit like that. But yeah, so when I was 25, my husband and I took a trip to Egypt, and it was really a super incredible experience for both of us, but particularly for me, because Egypt was kind of, was almost like it was my best friend when I was a kid. And those stories have kind of shaped who I am. So when we got back, I got that tattoo to kind of celebrate that. And then when I was 30, I decided to get another tattoo for my birthday. And that was also to celebrate my first books coming out. And so I got Sherlock Holmes, because Arthur Conan Doyle is one of my kind of writing idols. And Sherlock Holmes is one of my favourite, you know, literary characters. Yeah. And also my pen name, Stephanie Holmes, is actually named, the last name Holmes is from Sherlock Holmes. That's how I decided on that.
Oh, cool.
And it's just a black silhouette of Sherlock's face, and it's in a frame, and there's a little dinosaur skeleton in the frame, and those are all elements, the elements of the frame and the dinosaur are all elements that were part of my first book and my first book cover.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Okay, thank you for sharing that. Sorry, that was a bit of a personal question, but I really appreciate that. Because it sounds, you know, you are really pushing the boundaries here. And I was looking at, and I haven't read one of your books, but I'm going to, by the way, one of your heroines, I think, is it Maeve? Is that how you pronounce her
Maeve.
Name?
Maeve. Yeah.
You know, the science nerd. She's a witch. She's clever. She's calculated. And how do these women come to you, or how do your heroines or heroes come to you?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Sometimes they are a little bit inspired by people I know.
Mm-hmm.
But often they just, like Maeve in particular, whose story came because I had this idea about a character who inherited a castle in England, which is how her story starts. Her parents die, and she finds out that she's inherited this castle in England, and she's a American, and that she also found out she was a witch. And I loved this idea of a super, you know, what if you took a super pragmatic, super scientific person and then told them they had all these magical powers that they've spent their whole life saying, you know, magic doesn't exist, it's all, you know, it's all about science, and kind of what that cognitive dissonance that has to go on in your head in order to accept those two things.
Yeah.
And a huge part of that book is about Maeve's struggle to bring together those two parts of herself. And, you know, it's all a metaphor for all the different things that go on in the book, and it's really exciting. But, yeah, a lot of them come out of the initial idea for the book. You know, you get a spark of the idea, and you think, well, you know, what person is going to be really interesting to throw into this world? And that is, and that's usually the start of it.
Oh, wow. It sounds really incredible. And you've got series of some of your books as well. So do the characters just say, I just want to stay around a little bit longer? Or do you just go, well, I really like you, so I'm just going to throw you into another situation? Or
It's a little bit of a purely business decision. series are much easier to sell than standalone books, because readers invest in a series. So if they buy one book, then they're very likely to go on and buy books two, books three, books four, books five. Whereas with standalone books, readers might buy one book and read it, and then they'll move on to another author, because they're not, readers are series loyal before they are author loyal.
Because you get invested in the characters a little bit and I guess leave a little part of yourself with each character as you read it.
Exactly. So, yeah, so what I do is I write in series, and then I will advertise the first book in the series. And sometimes I've got a couple of series where the first book is actually free, and it may seem weird to write an entire book and then give it away for free, but I make an income based off of a certain percentage of those readers who read the first book for free going on to books two and books three and books four.
That actually makes sense. Yeah, I didn't realise that. Thank you. And No, how do you stay organised and consistent and get things done? Because obviously a lot of our listeners here, I like to be able to give tools and strategies for people because we're all in business, or most of us are in business for ourselves a lot of the time, and it can be hard to just stick to our knitting, so to speak, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not... I fully admit, and my husband would back me up, that I'm not the most organised person on earth. And it's almost because I'm not the most organised person, I have to be really organised, because otherwise I just forget stuff. I have to be quite pared back in terms of the tools I use. So I literally have, I use Google Calendar to schedule things, and kind of, you know, here's when that article's due, or here's when this thing is due. And then I basically keep a running to-do list in a Google Doc folder. And I, you know, delete things off the list when they're done, or I kind of shuffle them around the days that I can do them. And I've tried to use other tools like Trello boards and things like that, but I find that I just don't use them. So that's the system that works for me. And I do everything on the cloud, so that because I've had far too many disasters of computers crashing and losing
30,000 words or 80,000 words. Wow.
It's just far too much of that's happened. So I've been using, I just use plain old Google Drive, Google Docs, Google Sheets, and that's been pretty amazing. And the first couple of years where I was writing, I would kind of flip back and forth between projects. So I'd write like two books of this series and then go and do another thing and then try and come back, and so kind of go all over the place. And now I'm very strict, because basically Stephanie Holmes is my baseline, so I'm very strict. I do boom 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 every 6 to 8 weeks, one book in the next book in the series, you know, not trying to follow the muse, and be quite strict about that. And then I get free time to do other really exciting projects, and they don't have to be, you know, they don't necessarily have to turn a significant profit, or they don't have to be done on time. And I'm a lot less strict with myself about those kind of things. So it kind of gives me this really wonderful, vibrant world to kind of play in. Yeah,
I bet it does. Wow, that's amazing. And do you ever have writer's block?
No.
Cool. Because you're now in the habit of doing that, doing the 20-minute, you know, turning on the phone for the alarm every 20 minutes. It's just what you do? Or is it just like, no, this is yay, I get to play and now I'm going for it?
It's kind of a little bit of both. I probably used to have a little bit of writer's block back in the day, but I've written 30 books now, so I kind of know what's, you know, I know what's coming.
People, she just said 30 books, by the way.
And also, often if you have writer's block, sometimes I look at it and I go, I don't know, you know, there needs to be a scene here where this thing needs to happen, but I don't know how to write it, or I don't quite know what happens next. And usually what it means is that you kind of know what's happening plot-wise, but you don't know what's happening in terms of your character developing. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of know that, and I go back and I say, well, you know, what's actually going on in this character's head? And that usually will solve the problem.
Right. That's so cool. Okay, can I ask the question probably everybody asks you? Are sex scenes easy to write, or does that way you just kind of drop it and come back here to the sex scene and later?
They kind of are and kind of aren't. So they're actually, it sounds horrible, they're actually one of the most boring things to write to a certain extent. So what you do in a romance book, the sex isn't about necessarily about kind of titillating the reader, although that, you know, that's a factor, but it's really about like the emotional journey of the characters. And so what I do is, well, what I find is that there's that emotional journey that's really the interesting thing. So the first part I do of a book, it's all about that emotional journey that the character's going on. So the sex scene has all these emotions in it, but there's actually no like mechanics, if you will. And then the next couple of passes, I have to go in and write the mechanics. And when you've written 30 books and each one has, a, you know, 2-3 sex scenes, you know, you've kind of done it all before. So that bit of it is quite, you know, it's a bit of a could be a bit of a slog. It's not as interesting as a fight scene or
the emotional ups and downs of the characters. Okay, exactly. We've got that. See, I got that question out of the way. Okay, so let's switch gears a little bit because you've got a new book coming out in May it's called Only Freaks Turn Things Into Bones. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yes. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Because this is such a cool little book by the looks.
Yeah, so this is one of my neat little exciting side projects, and it's probably one of the things I'm most proud of in my whole career. And it's a children's book, and it's about a little Grim Reaper, and he gets bullied because he, you know, he's the only Grim Reaper at a school, and every time he touches something, he turns it into bones. So he touches a tree, and the tree kind of withers and dies, and he touches his classmate's little rabbit, and then she turns into a skeleton rabbit, and it's a little skeleton hopping around. And everyone's really mean to him because he's different. And the book is all about learning to, you know, to accept and celebrate being different. It was inspired because I was bullied quite a lot as a kid and as a teenager, you know, because of my eyes, because I was different. And
it's ridiculous, really, isn't it?
It's one of those, mm-hmm. you know, it's so super sad, and it's far too common a story. And it's one of those things that as an adult now, I realize was completely not about me. It was 100% about the people that were doing the bullying, and how they felt in their own heads. But it's next to impossible to understand that when you are, you know, a little kid. And the illustrator that I worked with is a close friend of mine, and, you know, she had really similar experiences. And so we came up with this great project together, and we did a Kickstarter campaign last year, and we 110% funded, so we had success there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and so from that we ended up with a publisher, and yeah, the book's coming out in May, which is the National Bullying Free New Zealand Week. So that's quite coming out at the right time. And yeah, you'll be able to order it from my website, and it'll be available. It's going to be available in some schools, in some libraries, and certain bookshops to be advised.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, so I'll make sure that your website and everything goes out on social media and things. And so I love what you said. You said that Only Freaks Turn Things Into Bones will help kids remember to celebrate the fact that they're different and unique, and that bullies don't get to define who they are or who they want to be. I just thought that was really beautiful, actually. More power to the kids. So well done. Well, we hope it's a huge success.
Thank you.
So what else are you currently working on?
I have just finished 2 days ago the next book in my Stephanie Holmes series, which is it's a murder mystery romance series. I'm calling it Agatha Christie Meets Black Books, because it's set in a bookshop in England, and where literary characters come to life. There's Heathcliff from Wuthering Heights, who's, you know, behind the desk, and Moriarty from Sherlock Holmes is there as well, and the Raven from Poe's The Raven, who's a really hot raven shapeshifter. And they have to solve mysteries with the heroine, and it's super fun. It's so much fun. And so the third book in the series, which is called Pride and Premeditation,
I love it.
It's just finished, so I give that to my husband, who's my beta reader, and he'll read that and tell me what's wrong with it, and that's probably going to get published early to mid April. So I finished that. So I'm just about to start work on a couple of little guides for writers, which I'm going to publish. Just sort of about how to write romance books and how to do what I'm doing, basically, how to become an author and self-publish your books, and yeah, so kind of trying to help kind of trying to pay it forward. So I'm going to be doing that, which is really cool. And I'm just heading off to Canberra to teach a self-publishing workshop. So that's really exciting as well.
That is exciting.
Yeah.
Well done. Oh, that's so cool. So you are an expert now in self-publishing, aren't you, as a result of being, you know, refused or dropped by a publishing house?
Yeah, it's really funny because, you know, 10 years ago I would have just dropped everything if a publishing house had taken me. And now, you know, if someone approached me, I would, you know, they would have to offer a really good deal to make me accept it.
There's a saying called success is always the best revenge.
Yeah.
I think it applies here. And we're almost running out of time, so I've just better keep an eye on the time here. So when you are going outside your comfort zone, because we all know that life has a lot of setbacks, but what have you learnt as a result of pushing yourself past what you thought you could?
Oh, the other side is just more pushing yourself. But it's so much fun. I mean, you just, you know, yeah, it's so many things I've done have been so terrifying. And I mean, even right now, I'm a little bit terrified about getting on this plane by myself and going off to Canberra to do this thing. But, you know, it's also a little bit of an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
And, you know, coming off stage after doing a speech that you're really nervous about, or publishing a book that you don't know, you know, if anyone's going to like, it's a huge, oh, I did that. You know, yeah. If I did that, I can do anything.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it? Yeah, it's just amazing. And that just empowers more and yeah, just goes.
It's like a rolling stone going down a hill, just picking up all the stuff as it goes along.
I love that. And then just the momentum just keeps on going. Now, the question I ask most of my guests is, what is most remarkable about what you do and who you are? Because my thing is, if we don't value who we are, then no one else is going to. So what is remarkable about you, Steph?
I think in terms of the work that I produce, I have a really unique voice. So when you read a book that's written by me, and it doesn't matter if it's a steamy romance book or a serious science fiction book or a kid's book about a grim reaper who turns things into bones, you're always going to get, you know, you always know you're going to be reading a book that's written by me, because I have a really unique voice, and I feel as though I'm saying really important things about the world, just in a fun way. Yeah.
I love that. That is remarkable. Thank you so much for joining me today, Steph. I can't believe that 30 minutes has gone already. And we've got one of your favourite songs to come on next by Nick Cave. So thank you again for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was heaps of fun.
Come sail your ships around me and burn your bridges down. We make a little history, baby, every time you come around. Come loose your dogs upon me and let your hair hang down. You are a little mystery to me. Every time you call around, we talk about it all night long. We define our mind. faces fallen sand.